This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 132B, page 513, and we're talking about how to achieve freedom from the lower meaning of the houses and focus oneself in the higher meaning of the houses and perhaps eventually translate oneself into the energies themselves which the arms represent, even though the houses reflect them. So where Saturn is found, Uranus is found, Pluto is found, there may be a way to extricate oneself from the lower meaning of the circumstances indicated by the houses. The horoscope built around the sun's sign is adequate for ordinary humanity. We wouldn't necessarily have to take the sun to the ascendant because the ascending sign, even in a personal way, is significant, and the position of the sun given your particular ascendant is significant in your life. We wouldn't be superimposing if we didn't bring the sun over to the ascendant, but we can simply interpret the chart in terms of the exoteric planets and where the sun finds itself and the aspects to the sun and the transits and progressions to the sun and so forth really are touching the center of life for such a person who is still personality focused. I think if you look at TV, you know, I rarely do it unless I'm comatose. You know, you just see under most circumstances the tremendous personality focus of much of what goes on there. Occasionally I've seen this American Idol or You've Got Talent or whatever it is. Very interesting about the expression of the personality in a Leonian sort of way. I'm reminded of the fourth ray law of repulse. I must create the music which will draw to me those who like the pictures which I paint, the colors which I blend, the music which I can evoke. Me they will therefore like, and me they will adore. And you see a lot of that, the ray four combining with Leo expressing the personalities, if the person were most important rather than what the person is actually expressing. The true artist is a medium for bringing through some form of beauty, and the idea is for the artist to be simply the instrument and not get in the way of that which is meant to be expressed. But on TV you see so much of the opposite, but it is the individual emerging from the mass. It is important. It is important for people to distinguish themselves somehow and to realize or to receive some sort of reinforcement for the integrity that they've managed to create. So everything is a question of stages and recognizing stages. When we talk here, number seven, the horoscope built up around the rising sign with the esoteric planets ruling will convey the destiny of the disciple. If one truly is a disciple, of course, one has to be able to discern whether one is a disciple, increasingly mentally polarized, steady, having the one-pointed Sagittarian vision strictly in mind, not deviating, or if deviating, getting back on the path relatively quickly and not attracted by this and by that, but by a sense of a life program and what actually has to be accomplished willfully, mentally, in terms of expressing the divine plan. So is the person really the disciple? The very first thing to try to understand is whether or not we are actually dealing with the disciple. You know, not that we want to categorize people and pigeonhole them and fix them as if they are rigidly stuck in a particular box. Not at all. Everybody is a work in progress. The progress is fluid, and we are always possibly moving from a lower energy to a higher energy, or sometimes, unfortunately, the reverse for a time. So we're not trying to rigidify this whole thing, but we're just trying to get a sense of what planets can be used, really, to predict the destiny, because if a person is not responding to esoteric planets, what's the use of interpreting their chart in terms of those planets? It's a non-starter. They just are not registering those energies which would lead in a certain direction in the life of the disciple, but not otherwise. So the horoscope built up around the rising sign, and, you know, like I say, you can just leave the chart as it is, or you can do some superimposition here, possibly. So the destiny of the disciple, and if it's built up around the rising sign, look for the progressed ascendant. It operates by its own arc. We call it that ascendant arc. Those are the words of Charles Jane, but it also can operate according to solar arc, which I do not consider to be insignificant. I've seen some solar arc progressed or really directed ascendants being very significant. So the rising sign and the decanate it is passing through, and the decanate ruler of the sign is passing through as it progresses, will all be important. The energies will change, the emphasis will change, there will be new receptivity to different rulers, maybe certain extra zodiacal constellations will begin to show their quality, though, as I've said before, every person born in the sign is in a way related to every one of those three extra zodiacal constellations listed in the labors of Hercules. So as I told you, the disciple will later be responding to the influences of the 12 arms of the three crosses as they pour their influences through the esoteric planetary rulers via the 12 houses. So interesting here that, let's just say that Master DK did not remove significance of the 12 houses. He just is looking at energy and house as a different matter. Energy and house are seen differently. And so we have to think of the type of energy that is pouring into a particular house. Now, I suppose we could get rid of the houses altogether and just enter the realm of energy and say, well, maybe this arm is particularly important because it represents the rising sign, or this arm because it represents the sun sign, and the point opposite because it represents the possible impact of the monad. But in general, just stay in the world of energy and say, how are you going to use these energies? We could do that, or we could keep the crosses or the 12 arms associated with the house in which they are placed, mostly by the equal house system. And I guess everybody has to look at their chart in this way as well. I think sufficient self-conception, illuminating self-conception, is not always with us. I think often there's a definite lack of clarity in how we see ourselves. And self-conception ends up being very important, because then, according to our self-conception, we apply our will and our intelligence to make progress, however we interpret progress according to our self-conception. So we need the more advanced astrology to help us form self-conceptions which are truly related to the inner structure, inner and outer structure. Often we have erroneous points of view. So let's see, the development of an adequate self-conception is necessary. And esoteric astrology can help us develop this picture, as it were, of ourselves, this estimate. Because, you know, so often people, it's the Robert Burns thing, you know, and sort of Scott's language, would some power the gifty gie us to see ourselves as others see us. I mean, it's a bit ironic, isn't it, the idea that we can be so ignorant about ourselves. But esoteric astrology for disciples and aspirants, at least, maybe initiates, help them to reframe their self-conception in terms of the larger whole and their place within that whole, and not have a distorted or glamorous view of themselves. So we could work with the charts of the crosses by themselves as if there were no houses, or we could work with the crosses as they appear to pour their energy through certain of the houses according to the arrangement determined by the rising sign. If we got rid of the houses, in a way, the first arm of the cross would always be Aries, and its ruling planets would always be related to the general expression of Aresian energy. So we'd have to question ourselves, you know, about the use of Mercury in our lives and how Mercury was bringing through, in some way, the meaning of the constellation Aries. There are a number of ways now of doing this. For the time being, I prefer to stick closer to the charts of the crosses as they interact and interplay with the astrological houses. Maybe I'm just being a little overcautious, but I think we should take one step at a time and not disengage entirely from what we know in favor of that about which we can only speculate and do not know for certain. The sun sign governed by the ruling esoteric planets, now this is a change, and the rising sun sign also governed here, governed also by the esoteric planets, can both be used in casting the horoscope of the initiate. This is different from the disciple. So notice there are no exoteric planetary rulers as there were in the case of the disciple. I mean, he's going to tell us this in a minute, I think. When superimposed upon each other, the outer life of the initiate in the three worlds and the inner life of subjective realization will occur. So this mode of superimposition will be a feature of the new astrology, and I've been talking about this and also in some of the pioneers in this field. So we really are dealing with ruling planets which are esoteric in both cases. So it's the initiate in the three worlds ruled by the sun sign and its esoteric rulers. The inner life of the initiate simply ruled by the rising sign and its esoteric rulers. Now, in this particular case, we may want to take the sun to the ascendant, because then we will find that the planets involved, the esoteric rulers involved, indicate a different direction than they would have if we left the original rising sign chart as the only chart to be considered. So if, for instance, you have Aries in the 10th house, then the esoteric ruler of Aries in the 10th house will be Mercury. But if you use the superimposition method and put the sun, maybe at 0 degrees, there's a way of doing whole sign charts where you don't really worry about all the degrees, you just deal with the sign itself. You take Aries to the ascendant, then that Mercury will have a lot to do with the meaning of the first house, of the outer life of the initiate in the three worlds. And then when we look at the rising sign chart, that Mercury will be up there in the 10th arm or the 10th area. And it will have more to do with the inner life of subjective realization. So this is very, very practical, and DK is basically telling us that the new astrology can be built upon this type of superposition. So you can do that for your own chart, you know, just use equal houses, let's say, and or whole sign charts, zero of everything, and take your sun sign to the ascendant and have two wheels, and then compare the orientation of the initiate in the three worlds with the inner life of subjective realization. Of course, maybe one would have to be initiate to do that, Or maybe one could take the life of a known initiate like the Dalai Lama, or maybe Albert Schweitzer, or maybe Mother Teresa along the six-ray line, perhaps, or Father Damien. We have his chart, and see what is the life. That would be very interesting for him, because his outer life was so hard, you know, and he was a Capricorn with Taurus rising. So we would have to take the Capricorn to the ascendant. Everything would change, and it would be Capricorn and Taurus. Capricorn here would represent the third degree, which he obviously took, and maybe was taking the fourth, the Great Renunciation, quite possibly. DK seems to hint at that, as if he's a fourth degree initiate. And Capricorn can rule that, but so can Taurus, using Vulcan. Vulcan is a planet powerful at the fourth degree, and with Father Damien, we would have Taurus rising in the chart of subjective realization, and we would have Capricorn rising, because it had been transposed to the ascendant, in the chart of the initiate in the outer three worlds. And we'd have to, I'm so tempted to go in there and see, but right now I'm just indicating what might be done. It's been a while since I worked with this, with the capabilities of Soul to Fire to create the superimposing charts, but certainly one can do that. And maybe best to stay in equal houses when one does that. I mean, if you compare the fourth degree, if you compare the Taurus with Capricorn, it's not to say that one is superior to another in all cases. But in the case of Father Damien, the soul realization, inner realization, would definitely belong to Taurus. And the most demanding work under the hardest and harshest circumstances would belong to Capricorn. But they are both great signs of illumination, and together could indicate the third and fourth degree for him. Maybe at some point I'll try to take that up. It is good to take up the charts of known initiates. I mean, when Master DK talks about the death of a Father Damien or a Jesus, initiate Jesus being an entirely different matter than the death of a Hitler, he has in the same breath talked about the death process of Jesus, and we know that was a fourth degree process, and Father Damien in the same breath. And the kind of renunciation which he undertook was, how many people would be willing to do it? I don't know if I know anyone who would be willing to do that. Maybe one? I don't know. Okay. When the sun sign, now this is more for the disciple. When the sun sign with the exoteric rulers is worked out in the chart, and the rising sign with the esoteric rulers is also worked out, and the two are superimposed on each other, the problem of the disciple in any one incarnation would appear, because really, let's put it like this, the disciple still has much in his nature which is exoteric. And that in his nature which is esoteric is fighting against the exoteric tendencies. Maybe less than in the case of the aspirant, at least the fight is under greater control and the end is probably sure. But it would be, you know, most interesting even to look at one's own chart, considering what one would be as a disciple with the using the method of superimposition, using the exoteric ruler of the house indicating the outer world life, and the esoteric ruler of the house indicating a more inward approach, and see what the conflict is. And then set up the same chart, but use esoteric rulers both times. And say, look, if I were really an initiate, and not simply a disciple struggling, then this is what my life would look like. And we can superimpose the two esoteric rulers on each other. And I suppose they're place in the different houses I don't know if you want to preserve the exact degrees in which they are found and those kinds of mundane aspects. Maybe it's better to work simply qualitatively and to simply deal with energies and their qualities rather than with exact degrees. There are qualitative superimpositions as well as mathematical superimpositions. And I think to keep things simple, we might want to work with the qualitative superimpositions. So, you know, I seem to be always using my chart here, but, you know, that is the bad habit of astrologers. They oftentimes use themselves as a reference. I met a man in the days before computer. Charles Jane had worked out a system where there were 49 charts. And in those days without a computer, what were you going to do? You had to pretty well work them out by hand. And I think this man did one such chart in his whole life, his own. After all, 49 charts and trying to interpret their meaning, quite extraordinary. And Charles Jane, I think, had worked out his own as well. And I don't know whether there was even time in the days before computer, or at least fast computers, to work out all 49 charts for everybody, especially some of those charts had to be rectified. So that takes the complexity of astrology to ridiculous heights, and we can only hope that the improved power of Manus over the next 500 years will allow us to condense the interpretation time, the processing time and the interpretation time for such a complex multi-level view of the individual. I mean, you know, when it gets so that the only person you study in your whole life is yourself, astrology begins to revolve upon itself or rotate on its own axis, and the results are not necessarily constructive because the factor of relationship would be missing. But anyway, you know, if I were to take my own chart with Cancer rising and I was to take that Aries sun to the ascendant, I would be looking at a superimposition, always of the esoteric Neptune connected with the rising sign. At the first house, I'd be looking at it in relation to Mercury, the esoteric ruler. This would be the initiate chart and would tell me about potentials I should develop if I hope to fulfill those requirements which would make of me an initiate. But if I were the struggling disciple, I would look at Mars as the exoteric ruler of the first house, and it would be superimposed upon by Neptune. It just so happens that in my own chart, all three of those planets are in aspect. Neptune is opposed Mercury, so there is necessarily an opposition, and one which is important, because Neptune must prevail over Mercury, but they're both Buddhic rulers and so forth, and they're both very close in declination. And then Neptune is also in 135 or so degree aspect with Mars, maybe 137, but close enough, sesquiquadrate, showing the solar plexus issue of conflict, because they both rule the solar plexus, and indicating which must prevail and in what sphere or what arm. Like I would say that arm-wise, Neptune would be here in the fourth arm, and Mars would be in the eighth arm. And so that tells me a story about that which is subtle and that which is not as subtle. And, you know, it could point me, the subject, in the way of what is to be done if I really want to fulfill certain higher potentials. One can work these things out in an astrology class which is dedicated to really helping people make spiritual progress and not just satisfy their personality desires. Of course, you have to take people where you find them, you know. That's the thing. The Buddha and the Christ could do this. Whoever walked in the door, whoever was met along the way, they could assess immediately what was the next step for such a person, and they wouldn't be talking about things that were out of reach. They'd be talking about things that were definitely available to the individual. But anyway, if you're, even an aspirant can use a combination of esoteric rulers and ordinary rulers. there'll be a battle going on between them. The disciple will at least concentrate upon the esoteric rulers and try to cultivate their indications, but will have an aspect of his nature which pulls in the opposite direction, and we do have to identify our conflicts, unless, of course, we've outgrown them all. But, you know, it's very helpful to identify the conflicts and say, what is contending here? What is really fighting here? I was reading some of those, I was reading some stanzas which have to do with ancient Atlantean rituals around the time of the third initiation, and there are eight sentences there, and one of them says, backward and forward, torn again am I, but only for a little time. Backward and forward shifts my little self, e'en as a bird soars into heaven and settles back again upon the tree, a tree. But God in his high place outlasts the little bird. Thus do I know that God will victor be, and later hold my mind and me in thrall. Well, he's not there yet, but he can see what's happening. So in the contention going on, one is God, unity, being, wholeness, and the other is the long-held joys of earth and flesh and kin, towards which the candidate turns occasionally. I turn me on my forward path and vision once again the long-held joys of earth and flesh and kin. It happens. There's a struggle. The struggle is between the personality life and the soul life. What in the chart indicates that struggle? So do attempt to identify your struggles, because we are members of the fourth kingdom of nature. Everybody has struggles. You don't just have to be a fourth-rate personality or have a fourth-rate mind to have struggles. Simply because you're a human being, it will be guaranteed that you have struggles. And try to find the nature of them, because according to that nature, it will indicate the level which is trying to be achieved. So, you know, the more I think about it, the more important that is. What, you know, if you're not having a crisis, why aren't you having one, DK says. So, in effect, and Scorpio bringing in the fourth ray for all human beings who are on the path. So what is the nature of the struggle which is presently occupying your energy system and your concentration, your consciousness? And what does that struggle indicate? DK here has given some understanding of contending rulers. Here, this is, of course, this is quite high. The outer life of the initiate in the three worlds and the inner life of subjective realization. What would we do in Alice Bailey's chart? Well, you know, she was a sun in Gemini, and she had Leo rising. Well, we'd take that Gemini chart right back to the ascendant, and she's an initiate, right? And we'd say, well, right in the very first house, we've got Leo as the ruler, sun as the ruler. Is the sun, let's say, veiling Uranus, let's say? She's a third-degree initiate, let's say. And the initiate in the outer world would have Gemini on the ascendant, and Venus would be the ruling planet. So we would then, it's the esoteric ruler. So then we would contrast the meaning of sun veiling Uranus with Venus. And I think in her case, I think it was Venus and Gemini, but, you know, one should not just guess here, because it's too important, AAB, and we can see, that's Abby, AAB, or maybe, well, you know, I have it in a different way. I have it over here as under the chart of disciple. And we will find Alice Bailey, and somewhere she was born, 1880, here it is. Okay. And I think we were trying to look at her earlier chart. Sometimes it's 10 degrees, sometimes it's 9 degrees rising. But we would move Gemini down, and yes, Venus is in Gemini, making that excellent magnetic connection between the soul and personality, and the ability to bring through in communication the quality of the solar angel, soul, or in this case, master decay. It's Mercury that's in Cancer. So we'd bring Gemini down here to the first house. I think, you know, what I may do is when I finish with this book, God willing, I will maybe work upon some practical application of charts, which I can offer in this same form, you know, visually, and just talk about them a little bit. I think I can maybe do that and try to put some of all of this into application, especially in the case of initiates and souls that are recognizable for some reason, famous or infamous. That would be a good thing to do. I do have plenty of, I've written quite a bit about certain people, and those writings are on Makara, but, you know, there's something about writing. All right, maybe it's more exact, but I don't know if it lives as much and makes it possible for people to stay with it as well. And it gets into such detail sometimes. I know I did the chart of Bach and Descartes and the infamous Heinrich Himmler, and I've done Alexander the Great, and I've done charts for many people who are on different rays. Sometimes you forget what you've done, you know, and it all piles up back there in history, but hopefully most of this is on Makara, and you can access it and try to look at that. But I think what I'd like to do is kind of talk the process a little bit, look at the interpretation of charts, but I'll leave that as kind of dessert for the end, meaning that I have to finish all this abstract stuff first, or if I don't make it, leave it to someone else who can do it. But in Alice Bailey's case, she would have a Sun and Venus in Gemini. It would be an obvious soul indication. It would be transported down here to the first house, and the Sun Uranus, the Sun veiling Uranus, would be superimposed. So we'd have Sun Venus rising in a way in Gemini, obvious indication of the second ray soul and the expression of energy. But the life of the initiate in the outer world, she just ran a school and she had constantly to assert herself to keep that school going. And what did she say? That she thought she might one day drown in a mass of papers or something like that. Papers, papers, papers. But from another point of view, the Sun veiling Neptune and the Sun veiling Uranus as rulers of Leo, she had to stand as a great example. She had to bring in the energy of the spirit, which is what Sun Uranus means. She had to exert great control, live as an example, be a revolutionary. She was part of a great hierarchical revolution, conveying, yes, the heart of the sun, but still more the presence of her monad. And what was it? Do you think it was a second-ray monad, perhaps? I wonder. You know, it might be, because she's so close to KH, Master KH, and I do think that Master KH carries the second-ray monad as well as the second-ray soul, where as Master DK carries more the third-ray monad and the second-ray soul, just as the Buddha did. You know, one day that which is speculation now need not be speculation, and we will know with certainty. But anyway, all of these planets would change houses if we superimpose them. That's what I'm, right now I'm just talking the matter, but later I'll actually have to show you what I mean. I'll consult with Nicholas to make sure I'm doing it technically correctly. With his fifth ray mind, he'll be able to advise me on that matter, and then I'll be able to offer some interpretations, hopefully. It would be nice if I could. All right. So that is the chart of the disciple, and he's got a problem because the wheel is turning in opposite directions at the same time. It's not yet turning upon itself entirely. It hasn't really broken through so that there's kind of a spherical synthesis operating. The fish is swimming in two directions. You know, the energy currents are flowing from above to below, and also from below to above, but increasingly from below to above. Even Alice Bailey, we are told, had the issue of raising her solar plexus center to her heart, and I suppose in her case she had largely a secondary astral body, which tends to be fearful, and she talks about her fears a little, doesn't she? So maybe it was raising that astral vibration into the heart center where perfect love casteth out all fear. That is a great statement by the Christ, and it's completely true. If you think about that in a very deep way, if you have such an incredible power of fiery love in your heart, it overcomes any tendency to fear for the state of the form, because you're so identified with something very different from that. So anyway, are there any more? No. If these statements are added to the three I earlier gave you, you will have 12 suggestions as to the lines along which the new astrological investigation can run, providing proof of the accuracy of astrological deduction and the guarantee of the truth of what I tell you. So DK knows the truth here. He's completely confident in the truth that he's telling. It's not a question of is this true or isn't this true, because he sees it exactly. So the other three, I wonder if I can find them and transpose them down to here. All right, so I've gone on a little hunt here, you know, and here are the other three. So he says, if you will add these nine that I've given you to the three previous, you will have 12 suggestions along the lines, as to the lines along which the new astrological science can run. So I'm going to just try to make this a little bit bigger, 12 suggestions. And I'll just read them again, you know. First of all, let's review what we've just looked at. Certain basic assertions, all centers are governed by one or other of the rays. We know the rays, how the rays work through various planets in this world period, and then he gives them to us. Ordinary humanity is ruled by the exoteric planets, and advanced humanity and disciples and initiates by the esoteric planets. The sun sign with the exoteric planetary rulers rules the personality. Indicates inheritance equipment and is the summation of that which has been, and the rising sign with the esoteric planetary rulers indicates the sole purpose, points the way to the future, and that's number 5. Number 6, the horoscope built up around the sun sign is adequate for ordinary humanity, and the exoteric planets are there, and man lives within the limitations of the 12 houses. And the horoscope built around the rising sign with the esoteric planets will convey the destiny of the disciple. And eventually the charts of the crosses have to be used as they pour through the 12 houses. Then number 8, the sun sign with the ruling esoteric planets tells us about the life of the initiate in the three worlds and also his inner subjective life. And the sun sign with the exoteric rulers has worked out of the chart the problem of the disciple in any one incarnation will appear. Then here are the other ones, and some of them may look a little bit repetitious. There's already a little bit of repetition even in the 9. He just adds detail as he goes farther. Here is the first one. If the investigating astrologer will substitute the esoteric planets for the orthodox esoteric planets, and I've indicated these in connection with the signs of the zodiac, he will get much instructive information, and if he perseveres, the verification of my ideas. DK has the right to be confident simply because he's a knower. He just knows this, and we're still through a glass darkly. We are learning about it. Number 2, if he will distinguish the effects of the sacred planets and the non-sacred, he will find the sacred planets endeavor to fuse the personality and make it the instrument of the soul. So really, we should be working with the law technique of fusion here, and using the esoteric planets to facilitate the technique of fusion, which must be undertaken according to the soul ray. giving us eventually, what would we say, isolated unity for ray 1. meticulous entirety for Ray 2 and for Ray 3 presented attributes. Well, pure reason, really. Inclusive reason for Ray 2 and for Ray 3 presented attributes. And the non-sacred planets influence more specifically the form nature. Much light on the pull between the pairs of opposites may then pour in, because we want to know how the soul and personality are fighting it out. And the planets may be able to tell us. The planets, let's see if I have this right. The planets may tell us how the soul and soul and personality are in contest. We can know about it vaguely and approximately in certain ways, but we want to know about it more specifically. And the planets in our horoscope and in the arms of the charts and in the houses may tell us. So, you know, if you have Mars oppose Neptune, you have two planets of the sixth ray. One is non-sacred, having to reinforce the personality, and the other is more sacred, allowing the aspiration to rise to the soul. You'll understand how the soul is pulling magnetically and how the personality is fighting to resist it. If he will study the fluid area, this is number three, where the planets veiled by the sun and moon come into play, and will realize that he must decide from a study of the chart of the subject and any knowledge he may have. Don't discount that. What is the point of evolution reached? And which of the three veiled planets is the ruler? He will get much intuitive understanding. I mean, we basically have to discover whether people are Vulcan people, Neptune people, or Uranian people. And he does, kind of in the beginning of the whole book, tell us that the more advanced will be Uranian and the undeveloped man Vulcanian. He doesn't really talk about Neptune in that context, but we can infer that it will have more to do with people who are at least chamomanassic or under the influence of the emotions, because Neptune does have a strictly emotional meaning, not only a Buddhic meaning. He will find himself able to throw much light upon the problem of the probationary disciple when he considers the exoteric rulers, and upon the problems of disciples when dealing with the esoteric rulers. So maybe the higher part of the meaning of the exoteric rulers should be used for probationers. The higher meaning of the indications, higher meaning of the exoteric rulers. They don't always have to be interpreted in a undeveloped manner. They can actually relate to transitional efforts which elevate the personality of the disciple into or towards the realm of the soul. So if the astrologer will consider these three points and be willing to experiment with them, there's the Uranian attitude, right? Fifth ray and Uranus, a great stride forward into the unveiling of the astrology of the soul will take place. He will find it useful also to work out the higher correspondences to the material realities for which the houses stand. And this we did over three programs. I wish it were better organized, but at least the ideas are more or less properly aggregated around the focus that is required. And so he will give some indication in relation to the first two houses, which he did and which we expanded upon. All right, so now we have now 12 suggestions for developing the new esoteric astrology, and some repetition, but each one of the suggestions has something unique about it and should be carefully studied. Okay. Now, I will try to expand this a little bit. Okay. It is just as impossible to determine which of the planetary influences are conditioning the centers in the fourth kingdom in nature or in the earth, viewing it as the vehicle of the planetary logos, as it is in man, the individual, unless the point of evolution is known. Now, we've talked about humanity, haven't we? And we've talked about the continents, and we know that given humanity's approach to the first degree, the base of the spine is not active, but the sacral center must begin to fade. He talks in Cosmic Fire about the good effects which will happen when the solar plexus center of humanity takes over from its sacral center. I don't know, he said, reduction of 70 or 75% of sex-related crimes is to be expected, that kind of reduction. Of course, the sacral center presents its own possibilities, but within humanity, different types of human beings represent the different chakras. So human beings are found in all the different chakras, and within the brain as well, like cells in the brain or mobile moving cells that are not implanted but can be used anywhere. DK follows this analogy in other books, I think, when talking about the status of different types of human beings, like cells in certain areas. So, what is the heart center of humanity? Well, it has been said that humanity is the absence center in the solar logos, but perhaps the New Group of World Service is the absence center in Sanat Kumara. I suppose there's a difference between thinking of what role we play within the planetary logos as a kingdom and what role we play within his emanated representation, Sanat Kumara, himself, as it were, an incarnation in a lesser space than the entire planet. Humanity is the world disciple, certainly an aspirant. It is sometimes called the world disciple, and is on the verge of being the first degree initiate. The sacral center and the throat center will be very activated. So people who represent the sacral center and its transference to the throat center, people who represent the throat center, attempting to evoke the creativity of the human race, will be in dynamic interaction. And the New Group of World Service, perhaps representing the heart center of humanity, will be coming alive, because the heart center is one of the focal centers. The birth of the Christ within the heart is the first initiation. The base of the spine is not to be considered. The Ajna Center for self-directing, the thinkers of the human race and the intelligent ones are found in the throat center, but in the heart center may be some of the highest. And the head center, I suppose we'd have certain initiates who are directing the human process but are still members of humanity altogether. We can't say that Sanat Kumara would be in the head center of humanity, although he would have an effect because he's not human in that sense. He would have to be someone who is still within the human kingdom and thus not beyond the initiate of the fifth degree. So certain initiates will be found in the heart center and in the head center of humanity, whereas the average intelligent person will be found more in the throat center of humanity, and some of the leaders in the Ajna Center, and more average man in the solar plexus center. Five centers being active, the sacral center being considered as subsiding, and the base of the spine not yet present in any a really noticeable way. Humanity is not yet a sacred kingdom, isn't it? You have to be, what do you have to be a sacred kingdom? Is it like the planetary correspondence? Do you have to be an initiate of the third degree? When the majority of human beings are of the third degree, will it be sacred? Or is it like the planetary logos, that the humanity must consist of a majority of masters? But then they would be members of the hierarchy. They would have moved into the next kingdom. So what is it for the fourth kingdom in nature to be sacred? That is the question. So It's just as impossible to determine the planetary influence conditioning the centers in the fourth kingdom as it would be if we don't know the degree of evolution of the individual. It's a, in a way, it's a lot easier to do that, perhaps, than to understand the degree of evolution of humanity in greater specificity. Unless the point of evolution is known and it can be determined upon which stage of the path of return the dweller in the form, macrocosmic and microcosmic, is standing. Determine upon which stage the dweller of the path of return is standing. The whole subject is constantly shifting and changing. You saw a vision never shifting as he moved. You know, it's a higher position than the six-ray law of repulse. But still, we have to get, if there is such a thing, and I don't know whether there is, but we can call it the law of mutability. I want to add something here to it. I want to call it the law of rational mutability. Not just change for change's sake, but change to for the sake of carrying out the plan. Cyclic mutability. There is a reason behind all this movement. And it's not just random, it's not just chaotic, it is directed by great intelligences who do not really superimpose their will upon any emanation of themselves which has achieved individualization. Just as the human being is constantly changing his focus or is to be found working first in one area of his body and a force, the three substantial bodies, and then in another. It's like an exercise program. You concentrate on one muscle group at one time. Whoop. Where am I? I hope down here. At one time, and then on another. So it reminds me of Master Moria's statement that rest is a change of labor. When he promises us nothing but eternal labor, of course, there is the great Mahapralayic rest, if we can call it that, the return to what I call the infinitescence. And who knows? I mean, nobody knows. I don't think anybody knows what goes on when God is all in all. And that has to do with the mathematics of infinity. Which I would someday like to understand a whole lot better than I do now. But okay, there's going to be a shift of attention constantly. But the main thing is, for whatever entity it may be, to know the level at which that entity is expressing. And we should practice that, you know, not that we want to set ourselves up as a judge, but we should look keenly at the people who surround us and try to understand the level at which they are functioning and the next step ahead and even what the problem to be overcome may be. To become a true esoteric psychologist, astrologer, it takes so much observation of the of oneself and the selves of others, both external and internal. We can't expect to learn it all from books. We have to open our eyes and look carefully at people so that we will, let there be light, so we will know at first hand and for ourselves and without having to be told what may be the condition of the next step. Well, I think what I'd like to do is to say that this will be the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 132B. And this this series of programs series also contains 131A. First time I've done that. Usually I absolutely split when I finish a a number. And this will be the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 133A, the next one. And I'd like to close this this series of three programs of approximately 1 hour duration, maybe one running over just a little bit or maybe too much, with the Great Invocation. Because, you know, occasionally, or maybe it should be every time, we have to remind ourselves of our most important instrument in facilitating the reappearance of the Christ, this ancient mantram held within the custody of Shambhala until the Christ declared his willingness to emerge in physical form as the savior, not only of one processional age, but of two. So not even at the beginning of the age of Pisces, he had to make that decision to go through approximately 5,000 years in the role of world teacher and savior. So he was already looking ahead toward the end of the Aquarian age, and it dawned upon his soul all that we, and by that I simply mean consciousness, all that we as a human race and a planet would be passing through, and he saw the necessity of his saviorship. And I suppose DK seems to suggest elsewhere what would happen if the Christ had not accepted that responsibility. I think much much worse, and we're in the middle of the period of that possible much worse. The Christ, we are told, is doing all he can to prevent a final war. Final. It sounds as if the whole experiment would have to be started again, and DK says it might be the case, so the great acquiescence of the Christ at the time of the Garden of Gethsemane made a huge difference for all of humanity. No matter how much suffering we may have seen during the past 2,000 years and during the last warring century of the 20th century, we can only imagine how much worse it would have been and could be if he had not accepted that extremely sacrificial acquiescence to the will of God, anchoring for the first time, we are told, that will within humanity. Okay, Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we'll be moving on to 33, I guess. Yes, we will. And we're in a very interesting and practical section of the book, which outlines the specific things one can do to develop the new esoteric astrology and things you would like to do to understand yourself more esoterically in astrological terms and to use astrology to really facilitate your growth, whether it's in integration or fusion or towards some initiation. Astrology can be a great help when we understand how to use it in relation to those processes. Okay, we'll see you shortly. Bye-bye.